Two retirements combined with the November election mean two new legislators are heading to Oregon's capital from the Rogue Valley. Sal Esquivel of Medford chose not to run again for his House seat. Alan DeBoer of Ashland chose not to run again for his Senate seat. The election delivered their successors in the Oregon legislature. Kim Wallen is an outbound Medford City Council member and representative-elect in House District 6. She's in the studio with me. Representative-elect Wallen, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Thank you. Golden is a former Jackson County Commissioner, former host of the Jefferson Exchange, and Senator-elect in Senate District 3. Jeff Golden, welcome to the studio.
Jeff, hi. It's good to be here.
Good to have you both here. So let's just get some general thoughts about the feeling right now. I assume you've been up for orientation. Mm-hmm. Jeff, you've been there before because you used to work at the legislature. Right. Kim Wall, let me get your perspective first.
Our orientation was pretty minimal, actually. So I still have some onboarding and getting badges and things like that to take care of. But we have this coming up week. We'll have a lot of trainings and so forth. So that'll take care of that. I interned in the legislature when I was in college. I went to Willamette, so it was across the street. So I have a bit of an idea, actually. And then I was staff for the Judiciary Committee in the Senate when I was between college and law school. So I have a little bit of familiarity with the building.
Okay, so you didn't exactly go in there wondering where everything was. Okay,
no. That's good.
Jeff Golden, you had served as a chief of staff to Bill Bradbury?
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? It's been a while, 1993.
Okay, so wow, 25 years plus then. And how does the legislature seem to you now? I mean, granted, it's not in session yet, but what does the building seem like?
Well, it seems really energized, really high energy. It's hard, you know, the first session as an elected official there, I don't have a baseline to compare, but people who have been there say there's more happening, there's more anticipation, there's more change, there's more a sense of urgency on some issues. Part of that is the smoke, which of course most affected Southern Oregon, but affected the whole state, really got people's attention and is going to generate some activity. There's a lot of feeling, you know, around housing and other issues that have become so severe that it's time for some reinvestment. So there's a lot of talk about revenue, and people pay attention. Another word for revenue is taxation, and that gets people's attention. So, you know, a lot of people with an interest in Salem want my ear, want Kim's ear, and my sense is it's a little more intense now than most sessions.
A lot at stake, you're saying?
Yeah.
And there's also the fact that there's supermajorities in both houses of the legislature?
There is, but the one thing I want to say about that is, you know, the thing about supermajorities is, of course, you need that to pass any tax measure, according to the Oregon Constitution. But my sense is that's overrated in importance in that any tax measure of real significance that really raises anybody's taxes is almost guaranteed to go to the voters, be referred to the ballot. It would be unique
either by
if
the
it
legislature
weren't.
Or by somebody who decided they wanted to force it to the ballot.
So it's really going to be in the hands of the voters. I mean, there might be some minor revisions that wouldn't go to the ballot, but anything significant will. So either way, I think that the voters would end up deciding on significant tax reform.
So, Kim Wallen, when you think about things from the other end of stuff where you're not in the supermajority, you're in the minority, there are 22 House members who are Republicans where there are 38 Democrats.
Right.
That's a significant difference. And
yes.
I just wonder what your thoughts are about the working environment coming in. And you've had, I imagine, the chance to talk with Carl Wilson, your caucus leader from Grants Pass.
Yes, I've actually worked fairly closely with him throughout the campaign because he's from a neighboring district. And so, yes, I know him fairly well. And actually, with only 22 of us, I've had an opportunity to meet almost everyone and have a pretty good, robust conversation with almost everyone.
Is that the good news of having a small caucus?
There are actually some pluses to that. and so I'm an old defense attorney, so I'm used to having the deck stacked against me. And the committees I've been assigned to actually have some real import for our area. I've been assigned to the Emergency Preparedness and Veterans Committee, and with emergency preparedness between Cascadia event and the fires, certainly there, and after Paradise, we have significant risk in our area from forest fire, obviously. So that, I don't think that'll be a very controversial committee, but I think there's some good work that could come out of it. And economic development is another one of my committees. Again, not particularly controversial, but we could really see some benefits in Southern Oregon from that. So
Okay, I was going to ask you about committee assignments. Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't realize they'd been assigned already. I was looking yesterday, and I noticed Sal Esquivel's name still off there, so I figured the website hadn't been updated yet.
It may not have been updated, but there is a press release that has the committee assignments.
Okay, so let's talk about smoke, because you both brought it up, and you both brought it up in the campaign as well. I mean, what does the state of Oregon and its legislature have the power to do for a situation that, at least thus far, involves a lot of federal land?
Right. That is, there are some things. There's a some of the Good Neighbor Authority, and I was just talking to one of the foresters yesterday, and I'm going to forget what he service first, I think he said. There's a collaboration between BLM and ODF that could potentially go away. If that were to go away, the checkerboard of ownership between ODF lands, private lands, and BLM lands would get very complicated, and it would make it harder for ODF to put the fires out that they do put out. So that we can watch out for that. We can talk about where we should have helicopter and other air assets and what that would look like. And just leadership. There's a smoke caucus in the legislature that will be reformed with the new people, but I intend to join that. And some of it is just merely leadership from the state leaders.
What do you want to see that you haven't seen so far?
For me, one of the main things is just the way that the federal assets attack the fire. Sometimes they do things that are not necessarily, they don't necessarily put the fire out. As you saw last summer, there was an awful lot of dropping of additional fire, putting more fire on the ground at a time when the air quality was already terrible. There is a place in the forest for fire. There are a lot of species that depend on it. But we have the ability to control when that fire occurs. And I would like to see some changes when we put that fire on the ground and when the Forest Service puts that fire on the ground.
Kim Wallen is an Oregon legislator to be. She's a representative elect in House District 6, representing Medford and other areas of Jackson County. Jeff Golden is the senator elect in Senate District 3, representing the southern half of Jackson County. You can join the conversation as we talk to them on their way to the state capitol. The legislative session starts next week. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And Jeff, let me get your take. Senator elect, let me get your take.
Please.
Let me get your take on smoke.
Can we make an agreement that, given the history, whenever you have me on here, it'll be Jeff? Jeff,
fine.
Thank you. Smoke and fire. Well, there are a lot of pieces of this. One that I don't want to lose track of, and I'll just mention it, put it aside. Long term, we have to address climate change, and that's going to be some of my focus. That's not going to do anything about fires next summer and the summer after that. But let's not lose that piece. We're going to need in the near term collaboration like we've never seen before in response to fires and into reducing the severity of fires, which has to do with better forest management and fuel reduction in certain areas. It's a complex question. Fuel reduction itself isn't that controversial, but how you do it, where you do it, gets us fighting a lot. So we're going to have to deal with that, and I have a bill in. I talked during the campaign about trying to find a creative kind of CCC, public works approach, to the labor-intensive work of reducing fuels in the woods. And I'm asking to take a look at a really broad-based collaboration that could involve young people wanting tuition assistance, returning non-traditional students, corrections, inmates in the prisons. We want some funding. I'd like to talk to private insurance companies about funding because, you know, the billions they are spending out in the Redding, Paradise, Santa Rosa has their attention. So what can we do preventatively? So I'm asking for a working group to design a really ambitious, broad-based fuel reduction program that could get over hundreds of thousands of acres. You know, we've done interesting things in the Ashland watershed, but it's such a small place, and we need to scale this up, and it's going to take collaboration and creative financing to do it.
Well, that gets back to the whole dollars thing. And Kim Wallen, I just wonder what the Republicans are thinking about, because there were certainly complaints right after the election about, okay, just watch the Democrats try to raise every tax in the world,
right?
Since they have such a big majority in the both houses of the legislature.
That's correct. One of the things that I think we should try to do is, rather than try to pull money from some other industry in order to get the fuels reduction to occur, I would certainly like to see us use that those fuels. A lot of what's in the forest is not merchantable, but there's an awful lot that is merchantable. And why should we not use the resource we have to fund cleaning the forests? So I would want to see more timber sales in order to help fund some of the stuff that doesn't pencil. There is clean out in there that does not pencil.
But it sounds like you're saying there needs to be some logging to help pay for the rest of the process.
Correct. That's what I believe.
I think that's right. And when you get, the question becomes how much. In the old days, there was so much logging that it paid for any other forest programs. Those days are over. We're not going to pay it all through there. And in the past, environmentalists have felt tricked by so-called fuel reduction and thinning programs that, in fact, went after the old growth in undisturbed lands that is not part of the fire problem. So I think there can be a broad consensus that commercial logging on the already logged lands mostly can be part of the revenue source. But we gotta see if we can avoid some of the old timber war fights as we decide where and when that happens.
Wouldn't that be nice? We are going to talk about more than just smoke and timber here on the Jefferson Exchange with Jeff Golden and Kim Wallen. He is Senator-elect in Oregon Senate District 3. She is Representative-elect in House District 6. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's talk about housing, home prices, and economic fairness. By the different terms that you both have used in the campaign, Kim Wallen, what do you see as some of the ways we can get more houses built and at a price that is affordable for more people?
From talking to builders, which I do on a fairly regular basis, what I hear from the people who actually swing the hammers and actually put shovels in the ground, which at the end of the day you have to have those people, the things that they don't have that they need to increase the housing supply. Which, if you don't increase the housing supply, you are not going to bring the prices down. They need more land, they need fewer regulations, and they need more people, more young people interested in the trades. I hear that at least 5 times a week, everywhere I go. So in Medford, we did get an urban growth boundary amendment, so we are going to have more land that people can build on in Medford. The schools, we are working on interesting kids in the building trades. And the regulations is something we could do with the legislature.
So what, for example, is an example of an onerous regulation that needs to be modified?
At the end of last legislative session, I think it was an executive order from the governor, actually, that added a lot of environmental and efficiency requirements to new builds. That was about a $5,000 increase to the price of a house, the cost of those regulations. What that did was take houses, brand new houses, which are already 85% more efficient than the vast majority of our housing inventory, and require them to be even more efficient. And the other thing that it did was by requiring those additional dollars to be put in every new house, it made it only pencil for the builder if he puts in high-end finishes. Because you're already spending that additional money. And that's, I've also been told that about 40% of the cost of new house is regulations.
40%, you're 40%. Saying, of the cost of a new house, wow.
So some of it is just the cost of building. And we are disincentivizing that by the expense. And what we also disincentivize is building value engineering, if you will, lower end finishes. We discourage that when we require so many upper end things to be put into the building itself. So the builders I talk to are still very encouraged. They want to do it. They're working very hard with the schools and with RCC to get students ready and able to do that work. The Builders Association of Southern Oregon is actually having a tiny home build where they're involving the high school students just to try to get kids involved and interested in those trades.
So is there a shortage of people?
There's a huge shortage. We lost in the recession. Basically what happened is we didn't build any houses for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're 10 years behind. And we also, with the encouragement of having a lot of kids go to college, in Medford, we sold our wood shop, we sold our metal shop. We just weren't training kids to do those jobs. And people don't know that they are out there. So, and a lot of people left. building wasn't happening here, but it was happening where they had natural disasters, Houston, Louisiana. So we lost our subs. We just lost that whole sector of the economy.
Jeff Golden, what approach do you want to see taken in the legislature to making housing more affordable?
Well, this is all hands on deck, and I want to, you know, I've been asking all the players. Yeah, I understand you have interests. I understand if you're an industry, you need to make a profit to exist. I get all that. What can you bring to the table that isn't here already? So some of what Kim has talked about really needs exploration. I had never heard the figure that 40% of the cost of a home is regulation. That sounds high, and I want to see what that is. And, you know, I wouldn't more land. Clearly, it's time to revisit some of the way we've been thinking about urban growth boundaries and to decentralize some of that authority. Step number one, I think, for the legislature is to get out of the way and repeal some of the preemptions they've done that have told local governments what they can or can't do. I really think local elected officials are in the best position to decide what to do about this, what amounts to a humanitarian crisis.
What kinds of preemptions do you talk about?
Create preemption on rent stabilization, mm-hmm. some preemption on exclusionary or inclusionary zoning, on the kind of incentives that local governments can offer.
So you're saying the legislature should let those
people do those sorts of things,
they should. Okay.
That's exactly right. You talk to local cities who are willing. This is a tough political problem, and any local city who wants to house more of their people is going to make some people angry. They're willing to do that. And I want to nod to Kim and the Medford City Council for taking some leadership statewide on a construction excise tax to start developing. That's one model to develop funds for subsidized housing. But I really think that after 50 years, it's time to look again at our goals for urban growth boundaries. It's time, you know, I understand the state has said any city can only zone two parcels essentially for tiny home congregates. Well, what business of that is Salem? If Medford or Ashland or Grants Pass says, we have four parcels that we think could work for this, let them go. I mean, this is a tough problem to solve. Local elected officials are highly incentivized to do it. They're having people pounding on the desk every single day. Let's let them take a much more authoritative role in all this. And I want to hear builders, too. I mean, I'm not willing to say let's stop pretty ambitious energy conservation guidelines in building. But I am willing, if we're really at 40% of regulatory costs, let's find some of those that can be eased.
Jeff Golden is a brand new state senator going up to Salem for the full legislative session starting next week. Kim Wallen, a new member of the House. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. I suppose we have to talk about PERS. The public employee retirement system, unfunded mandate, somewhere north of $20 billion at this point, requires ever-increasing amounts of budgets at all levels of government in Oregon to be paid into the PERS fund to make sure that there's money for the people to get the retirements that they were promised. Kim Wallen, how do you see approaching this issue?
I know that my colleagues in the Republican caucus, House and Senate, are very interested in addressing it. There are things we can do. We don't have to just throw up our hands and say there's nothing we can do.
But there are the lawsuits, of course, that have challenged previous efforts to trim things.
But some of the first thing I would do is not allow Oregon judges who get PERS to make the rulings on PERS reforms. You could have interim judges, pro tem judges, you could get judges who don't get PERS. The conflict of interest is so severe. As far as I'm concerned, it was a violation of their judicial ethics to rule on those questions. So start with that. There are some other things we could do. There's caps we could try. One of the things that people don't realize is that you can leave your PERS account to your child. You can leave half of it. When you die, your benefits end, or your spouse can get you can make some options. But one of the options allows you to leave your benefits to your child for their life. That's not eroding any current retirees' benefits. There are things like that buried in the PERS rules that we could address. I don't know if there's an appetite in the majority to do that. I hope there is. I have not heard that there is, but I'm not in those discussions. So hopefully there is an appetite for that.
Well, Jeff Golden, you are in the majority in the Senate.
Well, PERS has been politicized like nobody's business. There is a lot of frustration about how PERS was set up, a lot of retrospective agreement that it was a mistake at the time, that believed that the stock market would always pay huge returns. We can't get in a time machine about that. I don't share Kim's perspective that there or sense that there was improper procedure when the Oregon Supreme Court basically said the contracts you made with Tier 1 employees cannot be broken by legislation. My sense of it, she's an attorney, I'm not, is that almost any judge would have, those were pretty clear-cut contracts. You know, if it's true there's a legal way to revisit that, I'm on board. But I think for the most part of that $22 billion that you're talking about, the majority is tier one benefits that the courts have said, I think, in an ethical fashion, in an ethical process, can't be touched. So I'm not interested in fighting and wringing hands over what we can't do. What we can do, there are a few suggestions. First of all, public employee health care is a bigger burden that gets less attention than PERS does. And there's a lot of talk about involving the CCOs in a cost-effective way to bring in some public employee groups that would bring those costs down. Current public employees, you know, the figures I've heard is that someone who immediate employee retires after 25 years doesn't get hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in pension. They get about $30,000 a year. I'm fine with that. I value those folks. But we need to, you know, there's ideas about special surtaxes on PERS benefits over $100,000 a year on anything they make over their final salary. That's all fine, but let's be clear that that in itself is not going to save billions of dollars.
All right, a lot of work ahead for both of you. You have 5.5 months to solve all the problems of Oregon. Go.
Got it covered.
Different parties, different houses. Jeff Golden, Democrat in Oregon Senate District 3. Kim Wallen, Republican in Oregon House District 6. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Best of luck in Salem. We'll be checking in.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very
appreciate
much.
It.